The bad news from Equifax just keeps on coming. How to make your app addictive. And Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us about a game that involves fighting for your coffee and another game that is harder depending on the color of your skin. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1849, recorded Friday, September 8th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we slide the tech news at you. We slide it on a tray. Mm-hmm. We slide it over to you, and you decide whether to take it or not.
Take it!
Take it. We suggest you take the tech news.
We prepared it just for you. I'm Jason.
I'm Megan.
Excellent. Should we talk about something we talked about yesterday? But
yes. Maybe
because it's kind of still a big deal.
It's actually
a really big deal. Yesterday, Ian Thompson was on the show, told us about the then breaking news involving a historically bad leak of information after Equifax was hacked a day later. And that hangover feeling just isn't gone yet. In fact, we're now coming to terms with the fact that this could be the worst breach of personal data ever when you consider the combined package of information obtained, full names, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, and driver's license numbers, all in a nice package wrapped in a bow. Literally everything that a criminal would want to verify that they are, in fact, you, even though they're not. Dan Gooden from Ars Technica points out that hostile governments, criminal gangs, and pretty much anyone else who might want to purchase this high-value information has all they need to confirm to businesses that they are, in fact, you, even though they're not. And just kind of the fact that the long-term ramifications are pretty crazy when those of us who are affected, and you know, more than half of all U.S. adults are affected, though we'll find out more as the weeks go on, try and get bank loans, try for credit cards. I mean, you could probably expect a whole lot more scrutiny. We don't know what kind of changes are going to happen, if any, to kind of the Social Security number system when more than half of all of them are fully exposed and on the, you know, the black market. It's just like thinking about what this actually means. It's just kind of a crazy scenario. I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like end times when it comes to privacy at this point. What's the point? I'll just go ahead and tell you my social security number. It is.
Don't. I don't want to know.
Okay. Well, I don't know where to start. Also, yes, it's messy, but Equifax made it even messier.
Yeah, they did.
Their website was the website where you went and you had to enter the last six digits of your social security number. Why six? It's usually four. And don't you already have that information right. Anyway? Was not as secure as it could have been. And so, of course, there's already a class action lawsuit. But part of signing up for their free credit monitoring service is that you give away your rights to be involved in that class action lawsuit. So you waive your rights. Plus, who wants to sign up for their credit monitoring service? They already messed up badly. The House Energy and Commerce Committee, Financial Services Committee, and the New York Attorney General today announced that they're going to be doing probes into the Equifax breach. So good on you. Probably means your information was on there too. So that's probably why they're acting so quickly. It is just, and then, you know what we're going to see next? The phishing scams. Like all the people saying like, I'm Equifax and just enter your social security number in this, you know, click this link and enter your social security number right now. You are, you know, it's just like, that's what we're going to see everywhere. And, it's a bit terrifying.
This form that you were just showing, Kevin, apparently is the site for checking whether you were affected or not, was running on a stock installation of WordPress, not necessarily enterprise secure considering the type of data that's on the other side of this. And by the way, WordPress is a sponsor on the Twit Network. Dan Gooden just listed out a bunch of, you know, things tied to this that were just horribly wrong and bad. Krebs on security also did a good job of kind of taking a look. 5 weeks to disclose. Of course, the three executives that took out cashed in $1.8 million in stock. Equifax is actually saying that they didn't know that employees of their level did not know of this ahead of time. Still, you know, hate to use the word bad optics when you consider what's going on here, all of that into, you know, considered with everything else, just not very good. The form itself looks shady. Hello, sir. Quit staring at me. Some browsers were identifying that site as a phishing site. So it was, there was something wrong on the back end to alert browsers and make them treat it, even though it already kind of looked suspicious to begin with. It was legitimate. But again, do you trust Equifax at this point? Apparently, some people were receiving different answers on whether they were affected or not, depending on whether they filled it out on mobile versus filling it out on desktop. Krebs entered in his actual information and got the same response from the site as he did when he just made up a number and made up a name. So there's like so many like elements of this. It's like, this is really incredibly serious. Did you take it seriously? Because it really doesn't seem like it for a number of reasons.
Yes. So Dwight from Atlanta sent us a very long, nice email that I unfortunately just listened to right before the show started.
Oh, the voicemail.
Voicemail about something called credit freezing. So,
yes.
You've heard of that.
Actually, I was going to mention that as well. So okay. I didn't get to hear the voicemail, but that's a really great point because you were talking about how if you go ahead and sign up for what Equifax is offering in their credit monitoring, you sign away your right to any sort of class action. And that's what Brian Krebs was also recommending. He says, and in fact, in most scenarios where this happens, he recommends a security freeze on your accounts in lieu of credit monitoring, and especially in this case because you don't want to give away those rights.
Well, Scooter X in the chat room just posted this story that just got posted an hour ago on TechCrunch. Says Equifax says it won't bar consumers from joining breach related lawsuits.
Okay, so
thanks a lot. I don't believe anything that you're saying right now, Equifax.
What do we even believe anymore? I know, right?
You know, I mean, it's not like I wish I hadn't used Equifax. It's like we didn't use it like that. You know, it's like we're not necessarily Equifax customers. They are compiling this giant database of our information. And, you know, it's like it's not as big. It makes the Yahoo hack sound like, I don't know, going to a candy store because that was just our account number,
right?
You know, like, or account name and password.
The number of people affected in the Yahoo breach was right around a billion, I think, on the high end. So that makes it sound more like it's a bigger deal. But what you have here is so much more potent. It's not just hashed passwords or whatever the case is. It's like literally all of these identifying things that in combination are what people use to sign up for loans, to prove that they are who they are, to keep things off, you know, bad items from hitting their credit report. Yeah, this is just all around really bad. I'm curious to know how it'll be treated. Farhad Manjoo, the New York Times, is saying that, you know, regulation needs to happen because in other industries, if your primary focus is to, you know, analogous to this, protect the data and you don't, and that causes the ripple effect that we're seeing now, then apparently you can't be trusted to do that. And regulation needs to happen to ensure that you do, because this is just too big to ignore and to leave to chance.
And Loquacious in the chat room is saying they charge to freeze the account. That should be free of charge. I think it's a state-by-state law. They charge in some states and not in other states. So,
if there is a charge, Equifax, you should be paying for that.
Well, right? I think about all the people in Houston and Louisiana and Florida, and like they're having people who have to evacuate because of the fires on the West Coast. It's like, this is the last thing that they need to do on the list. Do they need to do it immediately? Like, or, you know, if I were a hacker, I would be like, oh, let's hack, you know, let's get someone in Montana whose house just, is part of the fires. And so they're not around. They're not thinking about it. Let's get someone in Houston. Let's find someone in Florida. It's, you know, there's so many people that this is the last thing they're thinking about it, and they shouldn't have to think about this.
Yeah. Welcome to 2017, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, thousands have taken to the streets in Togo to protest the West African nation's president, and now the Togolese authorities have blocked internet access and texting, according to Dyn, a company that monitors internet traffic. The stoppage happened around 9 GMT yesterday morning and has been confirmed by the independent organization Internet Without Borders. Meanwhile, residents reported being unable to use SMS text messaging earlier this week. The move is widely seen as a way for the government to attempt to stop the protests. So this images and video are still coming through slowly. People are going to Ghana, which is right nearby, to use their internet access. And they're fighting against the 50-year reign of the ruling family, even though they have voted previously voted for term limits.
Yeah, I was going to say SMS is a good way around this because Twitter, you know, for example, started, you know, with the 140 character limit because you can tweet to it, at least to get the message out there. But like you say, SMS text messaging not working. So really, you know, it's all seems to be shutting down for the most part. This is really about limiting the coordination of the demonstrations, because as we've learned, social media is really good at that type of coordination. It's a really powerful tool for that sort of thing. So really disappointing that that's happening, but certainly not without precedent in this area.
Mm-hmm. But it is a violation of international human rights. According to a 2016 UN resolution, internet shutdowns are a violation of international human rights protections for free expression and access to information.
And I think, I mean, as evidenced by the fact that the internet was disabled on Tuesday evening and then Wednesday, there was something like around an estimated 1 million people turning out in the Togolese capital for these protests. So the word still gets around, but I suppose before the internet, things were organized as well. So where there's a mission and there, you know, there's a purpose, it's going to happen. But yeah, no good. Two-factor authentication is key to protecting and securing your accounts online. 2FA via SMS is better than nothing, but still has its own flaws that we've talked about in the past. Hackers can hijack SMS codes many times by social engineering with a carrier call, as simple as that, in order to authenticate as you. The top four U.S. mobile carriers today announced a newly formed coalition called the Mobile Authentication Task Force to take a look at the current system and its weaknesses and then devise something new in its place. They want to create an open system that works across all networks, that's interoperable with the solutions that are already out there. And I mean, I suppose carriers working together, but I mean, just based on the information alone that carriers have about their users, are in a good position to be able to determine if you are, in fact, you, if you're, you know, if you're authorizing something from a place that it knows you actually are. I guess they would be the right, you know, they would be in a good position to do that.
Mm-hmm. Captain Jay in our chat room said, I thought tech news was good news.
Sorry.
So this
not
is
today.
This is good news,
yeah,
right?
This is good news.
This is a coalition. I'm sure Sprint, Verizon, T-Mobile, that they'll get along.
Oh, I know, right? We can trust
solution.
Them with this,
yeah.
Right?
I know. I'm very cynical today. I hope that they come up with some sort of better solution because, I mean, texting is insecure. It's not like it's as insecure as, like, for example, trusting your information with Equifax, but it isn't as secure as it could be. So it would be better to have a better solution, like something like Google Authenticator or LastPass Authenticator, something that is easier and that all of the services use. But I don't see them working together quickly to come up with a solution, but I hope.
Yeah, I think they want to have something, I believe, I saw somewhere by 2019, I could be wrong on that, but they're hoping for it to be relatively fast in the grand scheme of things as far as...
They said sometime next year, which will be 2018.
Okay, well, there you go. We'll see if that happens. There's definitely some people out there that, well, actually, there's a lot of people that don't trust their carriers and worry if the carriers are the entity that you want to trust your passwords and that whole, you know, the mechanics of that with. So I suppose, you know, everybody has a little bit of distrust these days, and the carriers are part of that equation. So, you know, though they might be in the right position to potentially know you are who you are or you're not, do we want them to be involved in the password process when it comes to something as critical as that.
Right. So, I mean, even if it's next year, if it's 2 months from now, it would be a good idea to make sure that you do have two-factor turned on in your bank, especially now more than ever. We need it because, you know, what worries me about the like, oh, well, the SMS isn't secure. It's like, it's better than nothing. So two-factor is good. It's what we have right now. And so turn it on.
Turn it on.
Everywhere you can. TechCrunch reports that a company dedicated to finding ways to hook users has earned $1 million in seed funding. Dopamine Labs isn't hiding the fact that it can show app developers how to make addictive apps. They say they're using brain hacking to make people healthy, wealthy, happy, and wise. To that end, the company also has created an app called Space that encourages you to breathe mindfully for a few seconds and then decide whether you really want to use that addictive app or not. The company, created by a neuroscientist and an economist, aims to use artificial intelligence to determine the exact right amount of dopamine that humans need from an app to keep using it. Of course, dopamine is that like good feeling we get when, you know, we give someone a hug or we check Twitter or we...
Right, we get a notification and like instantly you kind of light up a little bit and you're like, oh, I wonder what it says.
Right, or you know, sometimes you get it from eating French fries or like all kinds of pleasurable activities. And so they've figured out how to do that in an app with code, which is, this story was just very interesting to me because they're like openly saying like, we will help you create an app that people will be addicted to. Isn't that wonderful? But at the same time, they're saying, you know, we just want to bring joy. But does addiction bring joy?
Well, so I guess it really depends on how they plan to position this and if they're going to cherry pick who and what use it, which I didn't see any indication either way. I don't know if that is their goal, but there was an article that was posted on them a few months back, and it had some examples of some companies that were using the technology, and they were all pretty positive. Root, which is a teaching tool for university students, implemented the API. They saw a 9% attendance improvement as a possibly associated with that. Tal, which is a microlender, say that they saw a 14% boost in repayment of microloans. Vimify, which is a health living coaching app, saw 21% boost in its users sticking to diet exercise plans. So it seems like a part of this, see, at least in their examples that they provided, tend to be like for doing good, you know. And I don't know if that's a part of a component of how or if they select who is using this. Like another example is Brighton, which is a happy social network, saw 167% improvement in users opening the app and posting positive messages. So it all kind of goes down that path. And I don't know if that's intentional or if they just picked really good examples.
So like if a Candy Crush like app came to them, would they be like, nope?
Or? Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, they obviously, because they also created Space, which is about, you know, removing yourself in a healthy way from apps that might take too much of your time that you might be overindulging in. Mm-hmm. They're obviously aware that some addictive characteristics about apps are not maybe necessarily healthy for us. So there's that awareness there. I don't know what that translates to.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a difference between being an app directed at an adult and a child.
Oh, for sure.
I think absolutely. Like, I mean, I think Facebook and Twitter are both addicting, but I'm an adult and my brain is developed. And so I know, I understand, like I can, you know, I can use them responsibly or not. And that's up to me, you know, mm-hmm. same way, like I love to eat French fries and it's up to me to not eat a pound of them every day, even though I might like to. Mm-hmm. And so, but with kids, it's harder, you know, I feel like when apps, and especially if you're talking about kids apps that have advertising attached to them, their brains aren't fully developed. And so to create an app that's designed for them, but it doesn't sound like any of these fall into that category at all.
I mean, these examples don't, but I don't know how that extends further. Where'd you get that one? there was an animated GIF on the site. It was a Deal With It GIF, apparently associated with dopamine. Mm-hmm. Anyways, interesting approach, and I feel like it's from their actual site. I feel like whether they're doing this work or not, there are a whole lot of other developers behind sites like Facebook, like Twitter, you know, these sites that are, and services that are really addictive to mm-hmm. use based on the information that they're feeding, that are also doing this research. They have mm-hmm. their own team internally that's figured this stuff out as well. Mm-hmm. This team just seems to be kind of opening it up via an API for lots of people to use. Mm-hmm.
After the break, Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us about one video game that changes difficulty according to the color of your character's skin. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. We all lose stuff. There is no shame in it. Sure, there are ways to hack your brain. I'm sure Dopamine Labs could figure out a way to help me find things faster. But why bother? 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. And now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you can never worry about losing your things again. It's a little bit lighter than the original Tracker, but it's still the same kind of Bluetooth tracking device that you know and love. And it works. It looks nice, too. It feels smooth in your hand. It's nice to have this Tracker attached to your keys. It is not ugly. It's quite pretty, in fact. What you can do is place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose. Your keys, your wallet, your dog, or your cat. Nobody loses their cat. Cats lose you on purpose. But if you want to keep them, try a Tracker on there. It's small enough to fit on the smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you can use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so that you can find your items in the dark. It's also nice to just have a little LED light on your keys. It comes in handy a lot. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on your Tracker Pixel, and then your phone rings, even if you have put your phone on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away. So let's say you left something at the beach, and then you're all the way home, and you think, oh, did I leave it at the beach or not? Because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world, you can help find your item with your Tracker. It shows up on someone else's network if they're close by, and there's so many people that someone is probably close by and will help you find your stuff just all through technology. Tracker also has a 30-day money-back guarantee, which means you truly have nothing to lose. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT. Entering that promo code lets you save 20% off any order. Plus, they know that we sent you there. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. It's been a good week for gaming, and Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us all about it. Welcome back to the show, Sam.
Jazz hands. I think he knows jazz hands.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, Destiny 2 is consuming the lives of many these days. You say you're excited to play the first 15 hours again. Tell us about it.
Well, that article came out before the game was out, so now I'm well past 15 hours. But Activision and Bungie were kind enough before the game came out to invite me out to their weird hotel meeting space right down the road from their actual studio to play through the game before it was out so I could talk to fans right before the game came out and say, should you buy it? And the answer is not necessarily go out and buy it right now, but I actually enjoy the game. Now, I like a first-person shooter. I like jumping in and shooting at aliens and having the whole power fantasy of that sort of thing. But I never fell for the first Destiny. From the very beginning, that game to me launched in a state where it didn't know what it wanted to be. It hinted at this wild exploration of space, but it never lets you actually fly in a spaceship. It hinted at playing it all the time and interacting with friends, but it didn't have all that World of Warcraft stuff that I wanted, like crafting. It also ran out of steam way too quickly. And what I was able to ascertain from that first 15 hours and then since then while I've been playing the full game is that there is stuff to do and it understands what it is and what it isn't. Destiny 2, like the first one, does not purport to be much more than shoot at a bunch of things with your friends over and over and over. Some of it is very repetitive because it's wanting you to get in and play it again and again to get better loot. The more you play, the cooler your guns and your armor will look, and the more interesting, weird tricks they will do. That has not changed. So if you're looking for a game that has 40, 50, 60, 80 hours of discrete story, not so much. But if you're looking for a game that you can play with a couple of buddies every night in a sort of chat room kind of way, a glorified chat room, which is sort of what I always thought World of Warcraft was best at, Destiny 2 also nails that, so long as you don't mind holding a video game controller and doing twin stick shooting at a bunch of stuff. I'm having a really solid time with it so far. There is a lot going on with this game.
Do you like it better than World of Warcraft, or is it just different?
I'm not a World of Warcraft guy. I'm not a guy who likes to sit and I don't like to click on a bunch of things over and over and over. I like a game that has some skill to it. And what I think Destiny 2 is really good at is understanding, okay, this is kind of like Halo. It's from the company that did originally bring us Halo. And it feels like Halo because World of Warcraft is a math game. You need to have your all of your stuff up to a certain level if you're going to have any chance against harder content. And Destiny is more akin to no matter where you are in the game, enemies will scale up or down to be as hard as the game wants them to be at that point. So easy enemies will always be easy. Bosses will always be a little harder. Super giant crazy bosses will always be super giant crazy. You can't just get a fancy shiny gun and wipe them out immediately. And if you're going to play a game like this for so long, you want it to feel good the entire time. And World of Warcraft is sort of at least consistent in the kind of stuff you do the entire time. And Destiny 2 is designed to be played for hours and hours. And all the hours I've spent so far, I've enjoyed the shooting from minute one until hour 18.
Wow. So what about the narrative? I've heard people have mixed feelings about Destiny 1's narrative. How does this compare?
Mixed is putting it really nicely. The first Destiny was terrible writing-wise because they had a narrative director who dropped out with about a year left in the game, and they wiped a ton of the story, and they just sort of patched everything together. And what I also enjoyed about Destiny 2 is that it does a pretty good job of setting the stage for why you should feel like a big badass superhero. You essentially learn from the very get-go about what it means to be the Guardian, which is the kind of superpowered character in the game, what it is you lose at the beginning of this game that you had in the first one, why that matters. And there's this consistent cast of about five major characters who are in your headset talking as you go through a lot of the different activities, and you get a better sense of their personalities, of their own individual stories, and how they figure into all the big stuff. Now, there's a campaign, quote unquote, that it's not very long. It's about 8 hours of just this basic, I'm going to beat the bad guy and get to the final boss sort of campaign. But Destiny 2 understands that you're coming back quite often to play in these little 2-3 hour chunks with buddies over a lot of time. And so it has a lot of these little adventure quests packed in where you go back to stuff you'd done before, and then new things will appear with new story and new context to get a better sense of why you should care about shooting all these things over and over and over, that this giant war is so epic that you do need to dump 100 hours into it if you care about the plot. And I kind of do.
So what platforms is it available now, and is it or coming to in the future?
Right. Right now, you need either PlayStation 4 or Xbox One. And on October 24th, they're going to expand that to Windows PCs. And that will actually be sold through Battle.net, which is Blizzard's little application on Windows, because Activision owns Bungie, and they're also tied with Blizzard. So there's that sort of weird soupiness. But if you want to play on computer, you will have to wait until October 24th. And I have gotten to play quite a bit of the computer version, both at preview events and during a beta period that came at the end of August. And if you can wait, I would say wait. It is a lot better on PC, is the shortest version of putting it, in terms of performance, in terms of scalability. You get a faster frame rate. You don't need the most amazing computer ever in order for it to run well. You do need a quote-unquote gaming computer, but the kind that you could probably build for about the same price as a PS4 or Xbox One. But if you already have the consoles and you can't wait to play, I'm having a good time so far, even though I totally am going to end up playing almost all of this again on PC.
So moving on, the new South Park game, Fractured But Whole, adds a little bit of social satire to the aspect of creating your character. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this came alight because of some press events that unrolled yesterday. And Eurogamer was first to really jump on this story, and good thing they did. The idea is that in the original South Park RPG, The Stick of Truth, which was a total satire of Lord of the Rings stuff, your character creation, you could become one of these sort of fantasy classes. And the joke there was that one of them could be just a Jew. Like you could be a mage or a fighter or a cleric or a Jew, which is just Cartman was running the show on that one. This one does things differently for the fractured butthole in that.
Yep, make sure to put a pause between butt.
That's how I help.
Yeah.
Is that your character difficulty in the game is judged by the color of your skin. Meaning if you choose to be Latino or go all the way to African American. And by the way, I say all the way because the slider goes in the direction of intensity of complexion. The result will be more difficulty. And as Cartman explains to you, the fighting won't necessarily be harder in the game if you do so, but every other aspect of the game will, just like real life.
So it's funny to see these Eurogamers discussing this. Like, I wonder, did they know, like, as they were they figuring this out as they were going
through? Was
this
like the first discovery?
Yeah.
Like,
this was, surprise. This was, they had the video feed while they were live discovering it, because it was the kind of event, Eurogamer does a lot of video first, text later stuff. So this is pretty interesting to see that play out, especially since they've got someone who's got this sort of weird purple super hair thing going on, which doesn't really look good with really any kind of person. But I think it's an interesting sort of way for South Park to use video games to have a South Park style making fun of everybody kind of thing. It's not my pay grade to speak to exactly how good or bad of a social satire this is, but I think it completely plays into the news of our current world that you can either look at statistics or look at headlines and sort of say that, yeah, real life is kind of, there is kind of a difficulty slider that is applied when the color of your skin is taken into account. I think it's brilliant. I've seen a lot of people talk about it. And I don't know what you guys think, but I think it was a good move on their part to sort of let a very simple decision in the game speak to a greater social issue without having a lot of text on top of it. There is also about what gender you pick and sexuality you pick are included as parts of your character creation. These are not about difficulty slider. Instead, there are some jokes played in the game, because the idea is that the first game you had to be a boy. And you had to be a cisgendered boy. So if you choose not to be those things, then the game will then retcon, as it were, how that makes sense with the original game in that sort of comic book way of things being retconned and re-explained after the fact. So I think that's more of a poke at comic book retconning than it is about gender issues.
Well, from what I read, it's you know, characters will treat you differently if you are a girl or a boy, which also can mirror real life.
Sorry. Absolutely. And we're going to have to wait a while for that. I loved the first RPG in the South Park series, The Stick of Truth. This one has taken quite a while. It's been delayed a bunch. So I don't know if that's good news or bad news. I do know the last game had so much content packed into it that it felt like essentially a full-length film's worth of South Park comedy and writing. So I expect that to continue. And if it's even anywhere near as entertaining and funny as the first game was, then I expect this one will do just as well.
Well, as we've said on the show before, South Park is not always my cup of tea, but I do like this, and especially the Eurogamer video, because it just shows how uncomfortable we are talking about race or gender. And it's just, you know, just it's for anyone. Like, when we need to talk about it more, and it makes everyone feel a little uncomfortable. So it's good. And I think that that is always what South Park has been good at, mm-hmm. making people feel uncomfortable. Yeah.
And I think when it comes to issues like race, when you humanize, when you are interacting in a game and things happen to you because of race, that might be an experience that a kid in the suburbs would not otherwise really have in terms of the friends they have or the stories they read in the news. So I'm a huge proponent of anything that takes social issues and finds a way to humanize them. And I thought the last South Park game was awesome in terms of taking the idea of South Park and making it more interactive. So slam dunk already for me. Hopefully it's carried out as well as it seems to.
So we missed you last week. You were at PAX. What can you tell us about your experience?
PAX! That's how I always react. Sorry for the sound guy for all the screaming I'm doing. I had a really good time at PAX West, which Seattle people call PAX Prime since it was the first PAX. Now there's 5 million. There's one in South, which is San Antonio. There's one in Boston. There's one in Australia. Lord knows what other ones. Oh, they've got a board game one in Philadelphia coming in November. But there are a lot of games. Too many video games. There were so many video games at PAX. But there were a few that we put a spotlight on. We're going to have a feature up at Ars Technica on Monday with our 10 favorite undiscovered or small gems along with some honorary picks. And two of my favorites I'd love to talk to you guys about. One of them is called Forgotten Anne. The word forgotten is misspelled because it's an anime slash manga sort of thing. And they love misspelling English words for some reason. Mm-hmm. But you are a woman in this strange medievalish slash, steampunk, sort of a steampunk world, Lovecraftian, where everything looks like a Studio Ghibli production. Everything is hand-drawn, or all the 3D stuff is done in such a way. If you're watching on the video feed right now, this is all in-game action, and there's a lot of camera pans and zooms whenever something happens that makes sense for the camera to pull in and out of and make it look like you're inside of a fully hand-drawn, animated by a team cartoon.
Wow, that looks
gorgeous.
Really cool.
I'm calling it the Cuphead of puzzle narrative adventure games. Cuphead is coming out pretty soon on Xbox. It's also got this wonderful hand-drawn style. But Forgotten Anne mixes this wonderful aesthetic with surprisingly solid narrative. You get to make a lot of choices as far as what happens, and the narrative diverges accordingly. You've got these puzzles you have to figure out by scanning the world and discover the secret anima, hidden powers inside of things. All these inanimate objects come to life. At one point, you have to decide whether or not a scarf that has like a little boy's voice inside of it lives or dies. And then your next friend is this like chair that talks to you. I like to think of that in a very Pee-wee's Playhouse sort of way. So that does a lot for me and as an 80s kid. Huge fan of this one. And it's Square Enix is putting this out on their sort of collective label. They've been publishing more indie games. And these guys made it all by themselves. And then Square Enix said, we want to publish this. And I think that's really cool. So I don't have a release date for that one handy, but I'm really looking forward to that. And you guys asked me to mention another one, and I've got one called Coffense, which is the worst name for a video game. Coffee plus offense. But it's a really slick kind of twist on the world of Smash Brothers Fighters. Now, Smash Brothers started out as this series where fighting was simpler. You didn't need to know all these Street Fighter fireball joystick commands. You could just get in and fight. But that series has gotten super complicated. Coffense keeps things quote unquote simple. You may not agree, but you hold a coffee cup and your opponent holds a coffee cup, and they're essentially attached to little yo-yo strings, and you're trying to hit the other person's cup without your cup getting hit. Now, anytime the coffee cup is hit, then you at that point have to try and get the little drop of coffee that pops out. That's your health. So once you've run out of all of your drips of coffee, game over. And you can also, if you're hurting real bad, you can take your opponent's cup or a drip of coffee in order to stay alive. So it's this yo-yo and liquid drip sort of mix. The video shows it a little better than I explain it, but I've simply never seen a two-player fighting game that seems so intense and crazy, yet has so few buttons. There's just a lot of depth and stuff going on, and I can't imagine if you are like new to video games, it's going to feel super easy, but it's relatively simple compared to Street Fighters and games like that. And I love when a fighting game just boils things down to you and your friend are trying to beat the crap out of each other. We're going to take all the complications out and let you do something zany with it. So Coffense is already out on early access on Steam, on Windows PCs. I don't know when it's going to reach other systems, but I can't wait. I really enjoyed that one.
That looks a little bit like my morning, usually, Coffense. Like,
is that the two of you guys just beating the crap out of each other and taking your drips and your each cups?
All we're trying to do is drink our coffee, and then the other comes up and like knocks it out of our hand. It's really awkward and weird, but eventually we get the coffee going. So it's fine.
I'm so glad that your life does not resemble that game. That sounds a little too hectic.
Sam, thank you, as always, for joining us. So there'll be a bigger piece on PAX coming up?
Yes, that's going to run on Monday. Also coming soon, my review of Zoe Quinn's book, Crash Override. That came out on Tuesday. Tuesday, we had too much stuff coming out, but short answer, thumbs up. Maybe not for someone who's never heard of Zoe Quinn or Gamergate, but if you have any familiarity to it, there is some new stuff, some interesting context on everything that happened from that and sort of steps going forward as we all look at our digital identities. Why would that be a relevant topic today?
No clue.
Awesome. I look forward to it. Thanks so much, Sam.
Thank you, Sam. See you guys. Have a good weekend. All right, feedback time. Andrew from Montreal writes, your DACA talk makes me think of a technology that can be problematic when the government gets involved. Those send in your DNA companies, for example, 23andMe, which is a sponsor, by the way, or Ancestry DNA, he says, who could be forced to reveal your information. May I suggest one-time use credit cards to pay for the service and to rent a P.O. box in the name of John Hancock? I mean, that kind of ties in with what we were talking about the other day in relation to this, is that you have all these reasons, all these intentions for why sharing the information could be useful, could be beneficial. You just don't know the long term. Like, what is the long term ramification of that? We never know. And maybe there is none, you know, but it's quite possible that there is none. But, you know, you should at least understand that there very well could be. You just never know.
TNT's fan of the day is Danny Skarka on Twitter, who sent this picture saying they are talking about Android, so I have no idea what they are talking about.
Yes, Danny actually runs a studio, media studio in San Francisco. I've met Danny quite a few times.
Have you ever seen his feet?
I've never seen his feet. This is the first time seeing Danny's feet, I will be honest.
Show us how your feet watch TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Please use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
All right, finally, Red. They're the ones that make all the like 4K crazy cinematic cameras. Announced a few months back that it has a smartphone, we talked about it, I think, called the Hydrogen, that's in the works, with a cutting-edge holographic display technology in tow. Now, Red CEO Jim Jannard has announced that the display partner is Leia Incorporated. It's a spin-out of HP Labs. The technology actually utilizes light field technology, the same tech that's used in the perspective-shifting Lytro camera, as well as the as-yet-unseen hardware inside of AR startup Magic Leap. But it's, you know, the demo that they show literally shows stuff jumping off of the screen. And basically what they say about this technology, it's a traditional 2D display underneath, so it can do your normal 2D stuff. But the light field technology is stacked LCDs with multiple directional backlights shining in different directions. That's what actually produces the elevated kind of 3D effect with no need for special glasses. So I'm curious to see if this is just hype or if it's the next generation of smartphone technology.
Well, so is it the same as, did you make, a couple years ago, there was that YouTube video of how to make a hologram. I think they didn't call it a hologram. It was, help me out here, it was some kind of somebody's box or something. It was like Schrodinger's cat, but it wasn't that. It was something else where you take like just plastic and you make a little pyramid out of it, and then you hold it onto your smartphone and you watch this special video, and there were like butterflies that flew around in it and everything. We made it on iOS today.
Cool. Kevin remembers that.
It was somebody's ghost. It's not a hologram, but it's a something ghost.
Oh, yeah. Visual ghost. I can't remember what it's called.
Make a shark. Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room is going to remember the name of this. I'm blanking on it, but I know what you're talking about. It's actually very often used in like magician magic tricks on stage or whatever. I can't remember. I'm waiting. I'm like delaying because I know someone in chat is going to get it. Someone's ghost, and I can't remember the name. But
you can. Let's call it Schrodinger's ghost.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm a Pepper's ghost. I'm not sure that this is the same thing as that.
The same sort of technology.
I mean, basically, from what I understand, I want to see it in person to see what the actual effect is. But they're talking about shining light through those different LCD screens in four different ways to get that elevation. And then from a content creator standpoint, the creators, you know, have a four camera setup to shoot the required angles or whatever. So I don't know if that's the same thing or not, because I think that involves a surface on which to shine it. And from what I'm seeing here, it really just seems like it's bouncing out of the screen, but I don't know how believable that actually is.
And so did you watch the video of the phone? That like of the actual phone that was going to have this. There was
the Hydrogen.
Yeah.
What video?
Yeah,
because I missed that.
It was Marques Brownlee.
Oh video. Yeah, he did post a video on that. I did not see that, though.
Yeah, it looks very industrial. Like, it's not an attractive looking phone. But I mean, I don't think this is going to be something that everybody wants to have immediately.
Maybe they will when they see that it's like 3D and jumping out at you and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I would love to see it. It's running Android, I think. So, yes, please bring it on. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Please be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV.
And subscribe to our show, twit.tv/TNT. We really want you to subscribe, even if you watch live. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And if you want to tweet at me to explain why you haven't subscribed, I need you to do that at Megan Maroney.
Needs you to do that. It's an essential part of going forward with this. And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Kevin for editing and TD. Both things. He gave me a shrug and an I guess. So we'll go with that. Thanks to Mario for helping out in the studio. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.